Hello, readers. My name is Jason Jefferies, and I am your host for Bookin', presented by Quail Ridge Books, Raleigh, North Carolina's trusted community bookstore. My guest today is Sarah Rose Etter. She is the co-founder of the Tire Fire Reading Series and a contributing editor at the fanzine. She's the author of Tongue Party, selected by Deb Olin Unferth as the winner of the Cake Train Press Award. Her new novel is The Book of X, published by $2 Radio out of Columbus, Ohio. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me. Excited to jump into Bookin'.
Excellent. Sarah, the protagonist of your novel, Cassie, is born with part of her torso in a knot. She is, according to the narrative, the third member of her family, the others being her mother and her grandmother, to be born this way. And this is due to a gene that resides on the X chromosome. I have so many questions, but first, can you talk to us about the knot? And second, how does her digestive system work?
Well, since I don't have a huge degree in anatomy, I'm not sure I can explain the digestive system. But the concept of a woman in the shape of a knot really rang true with me because it really seemed to represent both, you know, physical issues of the body in terms of how other people look at us, right? So how you're seen by the outside world and being insecure about your form or your shape. And then in addition, just kind of these kind of nice analogies and metaphors around anxiety, being handed down something from your family that, you know, maybe you wanted to reject or not have, whether it be, you know, alcoholism or depression or anxiety. And then kind of this lineage being passed through the female line of kind of surviving in a world that actively wants to destroy you and doesn't understand you. And so I think I thought a lot about Louise Bourgeois, who's a great, you know, visual artist. And frequently she would kind of create these shapes of women who were knotted in the center. And I really don't think I realized it at the time, but I think that had a huge impact on creating Cassie and kind of creating this female form that was warped and kind of full of agony and then trying to face the world in that way. In terms of how her digestive system works, you know, I'll leave that to the doctors.
Sure. Thank you, Sarah. The next very large thread of this novel, The Book of X, is that Cassie's family lives on a piece of land called the Acres. And on the Acres is an area called the Meat Quarry. Cassie's father and brother go to the meat quarry every day and mine for meat. Women, by the way, are not meant to go into the meat quarry. They are supposed to stay at home and scrub the walls with lemons. In the book, there are large passages dealing with the men going elbow deep into this bloody red matter that is ribboned with white rivers of fat. Can you talk to us about the meat quarry and where did this idea come from?
That one's a little bit more subconscious for me. I was just writing the novel on a writing residency in Iceland, and I did want her family to be kind of the land, but it felt really kind of boring to set it in some kind of, I don't know, just plain farming setting, especially based on her body. I felt the world that she was living in would have to be as strange as she was. And I think one thing about a setting like that and kind of a symbolic place where men are allowed to go and women aren't allowed to go, really kind of underscores this gender divide in that family and also subverts the reader's expectations of rules or norms. So if you invent something like a quarry, it kind of tells the reader, hey, you're in a different place and the regular rules don't apply. In terms of the symbolism of her not being allowed to go there, I also felt that was really fitting for, you know, a young woman, right, who's learning about the world and realizing there are certain things that are going to be off limits or, you know, being raised in this kind of gendered way where you're not allowed to go somewhere that you desperately want to be and that you're not allowed to do work that you're good at, right? Like, she's kind of grappling with this because she's so good at harvesting meat and she's so good at working alongside her father and brother, but it's a dream she never gets to fully realize.
Right, and Sarah, you live in San Francisco, and as I mentioned before we hit record, I lived in San Francisco for many years and wrote some things for a magazine called Veg News when I was there. And I'm having trouble deciding if San Francisco would or would not be receptive to the idea of a meat quarry. Do you have any thoughts on this?
The meat quarry feels very East Coast to me for some reason. I think it kind of represents this kind of East Coast mentality in a lot of ways. I don't know that there would be a meat quarry in California. I think it would be something else. It would definitely be full of wealth, certainly. But yeah, the meat quarry feels a little like the East Coast or the South to me, right? It's a place of like working against the land and kind of salt of the earth and being paid for like physical labor. So I don't really associate it so much with San Francisco.
Yeah, what I was having trouble to decide is San Francisco in a lot of ways is anti-meat, but since it's a quarry would be anti-animal cruelty, then maybe it would be okay.
Actually, you're not wrong. Now that you mention it, that makes a lot of sense.
Right. Following this thread a little further, Cassie's father and brother are also the third generation of their family to work in the meat quarry. Is there something special about being the third in a generation to do something in this novel?
Yeah, I think I was thinking a lot about, I was thinking about it in terms of feminism in a weird way, because there's my mother's generation of feminism and then her mother's generation of feminism, right? And each of these takes on a completely different reality in some ways. My mother was facing specific issues in the 80s that I'm not facing right now, right? So I do think, one, I've always been drawn to threes and kind of in numerology, right? Like, it pleases me for there to be three. But even more than that, I would say the idea of one generation building on the next to get further along really appealed to me. And I didn't want to go too far back, because then you start talking about like my great, 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 great grandfather, and that gets a little confusing. So I think the three was like a nice amount of span of time for the family and not have to get into some like tangled, knotted family tree.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Sarah, there are things about this book that stick out to me stylistically, the short staccato passages that move the book along at an almost breakneck speed, and then the sections that are titled alternate memory. You'll give us a scene and then follow it with a quote-unquote alternate memory version of the same scene. Can you talk to us about this element of the Book of X?
Yeah, so I was actually working for a really big software engineering company, and I was doing a lot of work with back-end computer systems and servers and front-end kind of website development and replatforms. And a lot of what we did was make two systems speak to each other. And we'd usually use a spreadsheet to kind of track the work and make sure that, you know, everything was accounted for and that the two systems could talk. And so, weirdly enough, this book, I got this in my head that there would be a character that kind of had two lives happening at the same time. And so this book really started as a spreadsheet. I started to take these short pieces of fiction and start to link them together based on theme. And then, you know, after years of kind of writing and editing, it became this world of a girl who has these daydreams where she's trying to picture her life better than what she's been given. And I think, you know, that was really the biggest challenge in editing, was because it really is almost two books. If you pull all those, you know, alternate memories out and you read them straight through, they have their own arc, you know, so it almost would be its own book, like a different version of her life. And I think too, you know, when somebody has a hard life and it's full of trauma, her constantly imagining a better life for herself, I mean, that is quite American, right? It's, you know, I'm imagining a better dream for me, right? And so I think she does represent that in a lot of ways, and kind of the ways in which that helps you operate in the world and the ways in which it also hurts you. But yeah, I actually ended up renaming them from alternate memories to visions, because I thought that was a little bit more, I don't know, I couldn't, I was going back and forth on it, but I ended up on visions for those now, yeah.
Thank you, Sarah. Listeners, we're going to take a short break for a word from our sponsor, and then I will be right back with Sarah Rose Etter. The Book and Podcast is sponsored by Libro FM Audiobooks. Libro FM lets you purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore, Quail Ridge Books. You can pick from more than 100,000 audiobooks, including New York Times bestsellers and recommendations from booksellers around the country. With Libro.fm, you'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company out there. You know the name, but you'll be part of a much different story, one that supports community. Listeners of Bookin' can get a 3-month audiobook membership for the price of one. Go to Libro.fm, that's Libro.fm, and enter Bookin', Bookin, in the promo code space. With each listen, take pride in knowing that you're supporting local bookstores. I am speaking with Sarah Rose Etter, author of The Book of X, published by $2 Radio. Sarah, this novel, The Book of X, has a character, Cassie's mother, who is very concerned with the superficial. She has a lot of magazines and is very concerned with whatever style is in vogue in a particular season. Yellow dresses, plastic nails, bleached teeth. Can you talk to us about this thread?
Yeah, I think I was just really thinking about the typical female, right? An American woman who is obsessed with magazines and fashion and kind of achieving this look that she'll never get to, right? Cassie's mother is knotted like she is. She has yellow teeth. She has broken nails from working on cleaning the house all the time. But she's obsessed with these magazines, right? And these magazines represent this ideal version of herself that she's working toward that she'll never reach, just based on her socioeconomic status, based on her body, you know, based on all of these things. And so I think the magazines really represent in a lot of ways America and the media and how a woman, you know, constantly has to dream after and idealize these states that, you know, they might never reach.
Right. Thank you. And next I want to ask, where are we in this novel? We're in a world where the city is simply called the city, where people pay for things and are paid for their work in gold coins. When Cassie has to apply for a job instead of an application, she has to send in a photo from the neck up. Where are we, Sarah?
You know, I really just wanted to create a world that was a few clicks over from our world in order to help elevate the absurdity of our everyday lives. So to me, this world is like maybe three dimensions over from the world we're in now. And a lot of the things that we deal with, going to work, paying bills, having bodies, getting pregnant, having miscarriages, all of which is book deals with, I think having those things occur in a different world really allows us to recontextualize those issues and think about them in a new light. It's not like I can say, oh, it's set in Pennsylvania or California or West Virginia. It's in a different world altogether to me.
Great. And coming back to the idea of applying for a job and the idea of superficiality, I want to highlight a passage from page 111 of the Book of X that takes place as Cassie is preparing for her workday. This passage reads, "Then I put in my false heart, which sits in front of my regular heart in my chest. The false heart is made of thin red plastic and covers my real heart, quiets the beating, and extra protection." Can you talk to us about this passage?
Yeah, I think I've been thinking a lot about the ways in which capitalism forces us to change who we are in order to exist within it. So I would argue that when we go to work every day, we put in a different person than who we really are. And to me, having her need to deal with that, to have this whole childhood of trauma and then have to go get an office job and keep her shit together, it felt really true to me, because I think the society that we're living in right now does require us to change who we are in order to succeed and exist within it, right? Like, she has to hide who she is as much as she can, even through how she dresses, in order to fit in and in order to make money and to survive. And so in my mind, what happens for her at that job is really a complete reflection of what capitalism is asking of us today.
Thank you, Sarah. Now I would like to ask about the men in this novel. Our protagonist, Cassie, falls in love quickly. I'm hoping you can talk about her relationships with men, and I'm thinking of Jared, Henry, and also her father and her brother.
Yeah, so I think if you notice in the book, there's not a really good relationship that she can model after. Her father and her mother don't really show love. They mostly focus on business and they fight and he drinks too much. So if you think about a person like this, you know, somebody who doesn't have a working relationship for how love is supposed to look or how a functional relationship is supposed to work, she's really kind of grasping at straws, trying to develop a language for caring about people. And I think it makes sense that she would be drawn at first to Jared, who is, you know, a jerk and an awful person. And then to see her go to the city and try to date and try to make some sense of the world through her relationships with men and sex, and for her to not really understand how to be intimate with someone in an emotional way based on kind of how she's been received in the world. I think her relationships with men ring true to me. And I think, you know, her falling in love with someone who's ultimately unavailable also makes a lot of sense, right? She's able to take this emotional risk because she knows it's not really something that can last. But I did want to give her kind of that beauty and that feeling of finding a soulmate, even just for like a brief moment. And I think if you think about kind of the great love affairs, you know, are they really long lasting? No. But her and Henry, to me, there's these beautiful kind of perfect movie moments where they love each other so truly. And I think someone explained it back to me pretty well. They said it's, you read this love affair between these two characters and you know it's as good as it's ever going to get for her. And that kind of broke my heart because it did feel true that she was never really going to be destined to fall madly in love and have a family.
Right. Thank you. And finally, Sarah, I would like to come back to the quote at the beginning of the novel, which is, "Are you living in hell? Well, try to make the most of it." Are you a glass half full novelist?
I didn't dedicate this book to anyone because it felt like I would be cursing them. I think I'm a glass half full person. I think this novel, you know, when I look at my favorite books, they're often in translation and they're often coming from Europe. And I think it's a little bit more accepted there to write a novel that grapples with existence and life and death and mortality and these kind of very hard topics. I think in American literature, you're kind of more used to this redemption narrative where everything gets better at the end. And I knew the minute that I started this book that it was going to be difficult and that it was going to, you know, stare down these issues of, you know, bodies, pregnancy, capitalism, being a woman in the world. And so I think when I finished the first draft, I was really sad because it got more messed up than I thought it would be. But then I realized, like, I stand by it. It feels, despite the surrealism, it does feel true to living right now.
Thank you, Sarah. And would you like to read us a passage from your novel?
I sure would. "I was born a knot like my mother and her mother before her. Picture three women with their torsos twisted like thick pieces of rope with a single hitch in the center. The doctors had the same reaction each birth. They lifted our slick, warped bodies into the air and stared horrified. All three of us wailed, strange new animals, our lineage gnarled, aching, hardened. Outside, beyond the bright white lights of the hospital, the machine of the world kept grinding on, a metal mouth baring its teeth, a maw waiting to clench down on us. I'm not religious, but I damn well prayed, my mother says, exhaling smoke over the kitchen table. I rubbed the rosaries raw that you would take after your father. My mother's knot rests against the kitchen table, and in my tender moments, I want to reach out a hand and place it there. But as soon as you crowned, I knew it, my mother says. I could feel your knot. When my mother tells this story, I take long sips of lemonade to keep quiet. I know she screamed the whole birth. I know I brought her the same pain she brought her mother. Your father says I went possessed. He says my eyes rolled back into my head. There are 4,500 different types of knots. There are 3,800 basic variations of these knots. There are an infinite number of ways to combine these knots and their variations, and in this way, knots are like stars. We could have been complicated, figure eights, clove hitches, sheet bends, reefs, heaving lines, but our knots are simple, overhand. Our abdomens twist in and out just once, our bodies wrapping back into themselves, creating dark caverns, women coiled as snakes. In old black and white photos, my mother poses next to my grandmother. Both conceal their knots beneath billowing blouses, standing stiffly on a gray lawn, their gray lips strained into gray smiles over their gray teeth."
Thank you so much, Sarah. That was a wonderful reading. And this is a great book. I really can't wait for everyone out there to have a chance to read it.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. I have been speaking with Sarah Rose Etter, author of The Book of X, published by $2 Radio out of Columbus, Ohio. Sarah, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Once again, I would like to thank Sarah Rose Eder for joining me. Copies of The Book of X can be purchased in-store at Quail Ridge Books and online at www.quailridgebooks.com. Our sponsor is Libro.fm Audiobooks. Please navigate over to Libro.fm and enter the promo code BOOKIN, that's B-O-O-K-I-N, in the promo code space to get 3 months of audiobooks for the price of one. My name is Jason Jefferies, and this has been Bookin'.